Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Monday, everybody. He's Adam Harahawk. I'm Sean Cantwell. We have somehow survived the 4th of July weekend.
We did.
Matt survived with all limbs and digits intact.
I didn't light off one firework this whole. I'm a little disappointed and proud of myself all at the same time. Not one sparkler or anything like that.
Neither did I, and I'm also kind of disappointed in myself. In my case, the wife wouldn't let us set off fireworks.
Oh, well,
we're in a really residential neighborhood with a lot of houses packed really closely together and a bunch of trees hanging over our property that could easily catch fire and burn down the entire village. Why do you hate America so much? That's what I want to know. Why do you hate this country?
See, when I buy fireworks, I buy the cheapos that you can get at Meijer.
Oh, the fountain nonsense?
Yeah, the fountains and screamers. Yeah, I like those.
I would just as soon not spend money on fireworks if that's my only option. Quite frankly, before...
If there's no danger involved, I'm not involved.
Absolutely not. Sorry, fountains, streamers, don't want any of it. Don't you even bring that stuff around me. Sparklers.
Snakes.
If it doesn't actually launch up into the air and go boom, I don't care.
If I don't feel like I survived it, I don't want it.
If I don't feel like I survived a war at the end of the night, have I really, really had fireworks?
If I haven't traumatized a dog, it isn't freedom.
It's really not. I don't know. Rachel's dog was over. Well, Rachel's parents' dog was over during all the proceedings when there were fireworks going off elsewhere around the reservoir and whatnot.
Yeah.
And, you know, didn't seem to have a problem. Didn't completely and utterly freak out every 5 seconds. They were fine. They survived.
Yeah, our dog was she was pretty decent. She was letting us know that she was upset, but it wasn't like the last time where she kept trying to jump into my arms, regardless if I was standing, sitting, on the toilet, whatever. She was just going to jump in my arms.
And that's a rather large dog. It's like, you know, Scooby-Doo trying to jump in your arms all scared.
Yeah, she's very much Scooby-Doo size.
Poor Shaggy over here, man. Mm-hmm. Feel bad for him.
Right?
That gets old real quick, I imagine.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it was over. It's over. It's great. I'm looking forward to maybe the next holiday, Labor Day or whatever. I don't know. I guess I'm just getting old to where I just don't like holidays. I like partying. Like, I had a great time at your party. That was a lot of fun.
From what any of us remember of it.
Sure, I did fairly well. I remember playing euchre and doing fairly decent.
You did do all right.
And now today, Dorothy and I were going over to Drew's mom's house and picking up a paddle boat. Yes.
Oh, really?
A paddle boat. Yeah, she's
that you're going to use where exactly?
The river, the
reservoir,
reservoir area over there. It's for the kids. I'm not going to get. If I got on it, I'd probably launch the kid off the other side into the water.
Yeah, I was going to say I can't picture you being a paddle boat guy.
Growing up, if I could get on a paddle boat, I loved it. I loved paddle boats, but yeah, not so much. I'm not a beach guy, which really upsets Dorothy because she loves the beach. It's cheap entertainment. It's, you know, the kids love it, but
that's really Rachel and I too. She loves the beach, and I could care less if I ever went to another one in my life.
I don't like sand. It's hot. I don't get in the water. You know, you got to hide your beer because you're not supposed to have that stuff on the beach.
And yeah, they frown upon that usually.
Yep. I mean, it's just, I don't know.
She'll want to wander on the beach looking for rocks and things, and I couldn't possibly care any less. And I'm going to go to the bar. Let me know how your rock hunting goes.
If she finds a nice rock, you're like, I bet you I could skip this. And before she can even protest, boom, into the back of the water.
And that's why I had to sleep outside of our last camping trip, because she would not let me in the tent.
It was a Petoskey, you son of a I can't believe you did that.
Yeah, she takes this stuff very, very seriously. Therein lies my problem.
Oh, you think that's funny? Grabs your phone and just skips it 3 or 4 times in the water. Bloop.
She'd probably do that too. That's the worst part. I could absolutely see this happening.
Yeah.
And I reckon at that point I'd have nobody to blame but myself for it, but still.
Yeah.
Doesn't make it hurt any less.
Just don't touch your wife's rocks. That's simple rule.
Yeah, fairly simple rule. Like, I have more or less learned at this point.
You don't touch her rocks, and she'll leave your stones alone. How's that sound?
That's fair. All entirely fair. We do have a few things I want to get to today, and some of them are even sports related, as we have like this last week before we go into a week where it's just a total dead zone when it comes to sports in their entirety. So we're getting all the sports things in now that we can before the MLB All-Star break, because let me tell you, next week, there ain't going to be a lick of sports talked about on this program. We'll do a little bit of, well, I have a burning question or two about your local teams that, well, we'll go ahead and do that next here on Happy Hour. Stick around. So I kind of feel like I'm having a kind of an existential crisis as a Detroit sports fan. And I feel like my everything that I have long thought and felt about rooting for my local teams has really been put into question of late. I just feel like I am forced to once again bring out, am I a bad fan? Yet again, because we've done this bit once or twice, and once sure. again, thanks to certain fans of a certain hockey team on social media, I have to just level with you guys. I can't do the Steve Bott thing. I can't just do the everything this man does is right and completely and utterly perfect, and I don't care how long the rebuild takes. I'm fine if it's long as it takes long enough to get it right. Like, 6 years into the rebuild, the Iser plan, if you will.
Yeah.
And we're kind of being set up, I think, to not make the playoffs again this year. And he's been very adamant that he's not going to put a timeline on anything. And so much of the social media discourse, especially around this team, and I've seen it in other places too, it's not just on Facebook. Like, there are people in real life that seem to be this way as well. But I find myself forced to ask, am I a bad fan because I can't just sit back, trust the process, everything the people in charge of these teams in this town do is right and just?
No.
I feel like that's how I'm being made to feel lately, certainly on certain wing wheel-based Facebook groups, a lot. Like, so you guys just need to have patience. It's been we're going into year six, and we might not even make the playoffs this year. Like, I'm being conditioned now by the Steve Bots that a 10-year rebuild, and keep in mind, just 10 years since Eisenman would have been here, not even counting the years before that, where Ken Holland was doing some combination of rebuilding and putting this thing just 6 feet under.
Right.
Am I a bad fan because I can't accept a 10-year rebuild?
I am questionable of anybody who says anybody is flawless, whether it's a political candidate or a celebrity of any type or an athlete or a general manager of said athletes. If anybody comes up and says that this person's perfect, they've never done anything wrong,
I immediately believe that you have to have done something wrong.
Oh, absolutely. And there's also the people who say, oh, this guy has never done anything right, blah, blah, blah. I kind of dismiss those people as well.
To be fair, Matt Mellon literally did nothing right. So, right. I mean, there's at least one just, documented yeah, example.
Sure. there's a good... It's acceptable to question when things are not progressing the way you want them to do as a fan. Now, there is an argument that maybe Detroit Red Wing fans are a little on the spoiled side because we did enjoy a lot of success from like 95 until 2014, 2013, something like
essentially,
that.
Essentially, yeah.
We got so spoiled to where I would have a lot of people say, you know what, I don't even watch hockey until the playoffs. I mean, and that's valid. If that's how you want to have your sports entertainment, that's perfectly acceptable.
Sure.
But I'm not exactly going to be jumping off any bandwagon either. I have been still a proponent of the Iser plan. Has it gone perfect? No. I don't
think Has it gone well? Also, no.
Well, we'll get to that. But perfect, he would even say no, because not everything is going to go according to his plan. I'm sure when it came to free agency, there were ones that, quote unquote, got away. There's ones he couldn't make things, couldn't pull the numbers together. It just happens. Last year, he pulled in some free agents. Some of them panned out. Some of them did not. Now, he has been with us since what year was that? That he was that was that the COVID year?
Which one?
Iserman. Has Iserman been GM of the? When did Iserman come in?
He's completed 5 years as general manager of this team. We are going into year six.
So he came in 2018. Is that because I've got the stats here? I just gotta know where I'm starting. Okay, well, I'll just start with the 2017-2018 season. We were at 73 points, 74, 2020 into 2021.
Okay, so 19-20. So, yeah, the COVID year would have been the first official year, yes.
2020, 71 games played, 39 points. Not great. 2020 to 2021, 48 points. The 22 season, 74, then 80, then 91, almost making the playoffs. So there is an upwards trajectory. Is it enough? Is it quick enough? In most people's, even probably Steve Iserman's opinion, no, it's not quick enough. But there is progression. We're also seeing where, you know, free agents are starting to look at Detroit as a destination. Case in point, Patrick Kane. He re-signed with us after a year. I know that when it came to Steve Stamkos, Predators were just going to, they were able to offer more than the Wings were. But
honestly thought we were getting Stamkos.
I seriously think that the Wings had were on Stamkos' short list of where to go after he decided to cut ties with the Bolts. But long-term money, there was a lot of those things. Iserman is not going to sit there and make those big splash moves like Ottawa did and Nashville and all those just to make a move. He's thinking long-term. It's a lot of people have grown impatient, but it's the aforementioned, you know, we're used to winning. We're used to seeing the Wings being in the
conversation.
No.
So far, 8 seasons and possibly potentially a 9th without even appearing in the playoffs.
I think they're going to make the playoffs. I really, truly do. If they don't, then you can honestly say that they took a step back, or at least didn't make it. If they finish the season 1 point away from a playoff spot, the same place that they ended this year, then they didn't improve. And then I think everybody would have to look and say, okay, now let's take a look and see what's happening. But as of right now, they haven't made the playoffs. No, that is a goal. But with the points and everything else, they have increasingly gotten better. And now all of a sudden, the team's starting to look good. The young kids are starting to play better. I'm looking forward to the season. I really am. Tarasenko is now part of the team. We lost Perron. That one hurt. That one hurt a little bit, but I think a lot of people saw that one.
You also traded Fabry basically to replace him with Tarasenko.
Yeah.
And you have not yet filled the hole that was vacated by Perron. And I'm not aware of any great prospect we have coming up on that side that's going to fill that hole. Like,
no,
it
that
looks
one
like
hurt.
JT Compher is going to be getting plugged into your top six now, and I'm not sure how I feel about that.
Yeah, that one. Perron going to Ottawa, where he was offered a longer deal, that one hurt. But that's what it is. We also see a lot of GMs just spending money like a sailor on payday, and a lot of times that doesn't pan out. Iserman's not that way. He's not going to make a big splash just to make headlines. He wants, if he could stay in the shadows, because he does not, Steve Iserman does not look comfortable in press conferences. He really doesn't. Even if it's on Zoom or anything like that, he just looks like he'd rather be anywhere else. He'd rather be in the shadows until it's time to award the Stanley Cup. But, I mean, That's not the kind of world we live in anymore, Stevie.
I suppose it's not. And I feel like we're being set up for this team's going to take a step back and we're going to go further backwards. And in a league where more than half the teams make the playoffs at this point,
right.
To me, it just doesn't feel like it's an acceptable thing to chalk up, to write off season six of the rebuild.
Well, I mean, let's remind ourselves of what division we're in. I mean, wild cards notwithstanding, I mean, we're still in the same division with the Boston Bruins, who are they're showing a little age, but they're still a favorite. You still got Tampa with the money that they've handed out, and the way they've improved themselves, they're not going anywhere.
That's a team literally in the last 50 years, in the case of Boston, they don't miss the playoffs more than any given 2 years in a row.
Right.
They've only missed the playoffs since the expansion era. They've missed the playoffs a grand total of 7 times in the last half a century.
Right. And we share a division with them, as well as the Toronto Maple Leafs, who have one of the best goal scorers in the NHL, and Austin Matthews. And then, Ottawa improving in themselves.
Hell, even Tampa the last 2 decades since 2002 has missed the playoffs only like 6 times. It's been 8 years since we've made it in.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to put all the blame on Ken Holland, but I mean, there's a lot of times that he traded away a lot of high picks, and he made it. And Coach Babcock being here for a while made things not look too impressive for free agents. It really gave us a big bump in the road.
Certainly did not help trying to attract people here, especially now. Knowing what we know now about Mike Babcock, certainly. Yeah. That didn't help things. I've heard it said by multiple people that this team would have had multiple. We could have been back to back champions if he hadn't been here.
Kenny Holland, remember he was going after Zach Parise and Ryan Suter in the worst way, and everybody's just like, they're going to come here.
And they spurned us for Minnesota.
Minnesota, and neither one of them won a Stanley Cup. Neither one of them really amounted to anything, but they got their paycheck. But it's there's a lot of grumblings. They didn't want to play for Babcock. They didn't see a whole lot of winners coming through Detroit. Because once you, Babcock, even though he was a cancer on that team, he was the one saying, well, once Zetterberg and Datsyuk leave, who do you have to replace him? Because it was a pretty shallow minors. It really was. But now, I mean, you got Yzerman in there. You got Lucas Raymond. You have Mo Sider. Dylan Larkin is becoming the captain that we expected him to be. You've got other guys like Nate Danielson, Marco Kasper, waiting in the wings. You got Simon Edvinson. A lot of people are saying that he's going to be making the big squad this year.
Well, he better, because I don't know who else they're filling these spots with, because we have nobody up here. We have basically Sider and nothing beyond that.
Well,
you got the Wish version of Gostisbehere and Eric Gustafson. That's what you got. Okay, you got those two guys. Great. What else? What else are we looking at here? Who else am I supposed to be excited about on this defense? Anybody? Bueller.
Well, I mean, we'll have to see what happens. I mean, maybe Simon Edvinson will become that defensive guy that we were excited about. We don't know. He's been spending all his time in GR, and can't really get. He can't seem to crack the lineup. Well, now he can, considering that there's a lot of holes in there.
Now we've gotten rid of your second best defenseman on the team, but yeah, we still have Ali Mata, Ben Chiarot, and Justin Hall, who either are not good or just not going to play.
Well, Justin Hall, I mean, If Yzerman could get a trade for him for a used puck bag, he probably would take it.
That's one where I feel like we were all scratching our heads about the day it happened.
Yeah.
None of us had any idea what he saw in this guy. And, well, as it turns out, the mob may have been right about that one.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're not all going to be shining stars. There's going to be a couple clunkers. I mean, you throw out a big net, you're not going to get all great tuna. Sometimes you're going to get a boot. Because, I mean, you had Alex DeBrincat come in. You had Gothis Bear. You had Daniel Sprong doing what he was able to do. Later on, you were able to sign Patrick Kane. I mean, yeah, for all those, yeah, you were going to have a Jeff Petrie. You're going to have a Justin Hall. You're going to have a James Reimer. But they can't all be golden. There's no team out there that's made 100% right decisions.
I suppose not, but man, when you're sitting in this long of a drought, and you know, for a long time I was willing to be like, you know what, I don't care. This team doesn't owe me anything because they were so consistently good for so long. But then once you get to the point that we're at now, where it's been the better part of a decade since you've seen any sort of playoff appearance, much less having success in the playoffs, it's just kind of hard to, you know, hard to convince yourself, no, we're absolutely on the right track here. This is absolutely the right way. And, like, the fact that people are so quick to be like, yeah, everything this man does is good and right. And, you know, how dare you not trust the Eiser plan? Like, to express a dissenting opinion is the worst thing you can do among this fan base right now. And
those people are out there.
But it's getting frustrating.
There are a lot of keyboard warriors. There are people who are 10 foot tall and bulletproof behind their little keyboards. And so that those people are going to be there. They're always going to be there. Eiserman could be lifting the Stanley Cup in June and be like, took them long enough.
We got to hit a break. We'll pick this back up here in a minute. It is happy hour at Solid State Radio. It is happy hour, and we are in the midst of trying to determine whether I am, in fact, a bad fan. Because I have gotten rather over, certainly in the Red Wings sphere, the Steve Bots and the just gotta trust the process. How dare you question our Lord and Savior, Steve Yzerman? Everything he's doing is absolutely perfect, and you're not allowed to maybe suggest that six to 10 years is a long time to not make the playoffs.
Well, I mean, the drought could have been longer. I mean, how many times?
Could it have been, though?
It could have been, absolutely. Had the Dead Wings era. I mean, it can't be the longest playoff drought in Detroit sports history.
As far as the Dead Wings go, so far, yes, it is. It is the longest drought we've ever had. In the history of the National Hockey League, this is the longest it's ever been. Even during the post-original six, if we're going to take like 66 to 83 or whatever. So we're talking the span of about 17 years. Sure. He at least made the finals or the quarterfinals twice in that span. There was never a break of eight or more seasons in a row. We are currently in the longest streak of not even making the playoffs that we've ever been.
It is frustrating because we're used to seeing the Wings do a lot better. But, I mean, there was a lot of times it was through that success you had to mortgage the future. I mean, we've seen what happens when Kenny Holland would trade away a number one draft pick for this player or trade a number one draft pick here, or then all of a sudden having to understand and work under a salary cap. That was a big thing when that was implemented in the 05, 06 year. I mean, before, you'd just be able to spend money. I think it was like $93 million back in 2002 for that that big old dream team that we had. I mean, they spent a lot of money, but you have to work under a salary cap now. The talent, there's so much talent going on in your division. Now, the Wings were in, like, you know, I guess I'm just talking out my mouth here, my left side of my mouth here. I was gonna say if they were in a different division, but there's really not. Maybe if they were in the Metropolitan Division, but I mean, the Atlantic Division is a very tough one. I mean, you've got three teams right off the bat. They're going to be number one, two, and three. So Wings and Ottawa are going to be fighting for a wild card spot, certainly. It's going to be a very frustrating time. It's going to continue to be frustrating because I think they're going to make the playoffs, but whether they win that round, I don't know. It's all going to depend.
I would like to see them win that round, but I'm not necessarily expecting it.
Okay, so hypothetically, if they do make the playoffs albeit in a wild card situation. Would you consider that to be a move forward?
I'm fine. That's at least a step forward, a step in the positive direction. Like, you've now reached the point where you have gotten to the precipice of being exactly good enough to just miss out on the playoffs. That my expectation is a playoff appearance next year now. That's just how it is.
I think that's fair. And, I mean, it is possible. I mean, I talked about the big three in the Atlantic. Toronto Maple Leafs have set themselves up, speaking of spending so much money, the Toronto Maple Leafs have set themselves up to a situation where they could, if Austin Matthews, God forbid, gets injured or grows cold or whatever, they could really find themselves into some trouble. And I don't think Ottawa, even though, you know, they got David Perron now, I think they have a lot of issues of their own that they're going to have to contend with. I'm not exactly handing them the keys to the playoffs either. If the Wings can get past Boston, which in the regular season they seem to not have a problem with, and if they can make Toronto, how you doing, Tampa, look a little bit more human-like, they've got a shot at this. They started really stringing together some wins towards the end of that season. But the problem with the Wings is there was a lot of stretches where they weren't winning. They weren't scoring. Or if they were scoring, they couldn't keep the puck out of their net. How many games did we see last year where they were losing like 6-4, 6-5 in overtime? You know, those kind of games. Tighten up your defense. That's gonna help out. Learn to win some of those 2-1 games.
Right. Problem is they haven't really done that. Like I said, you just led your second best defenseman walk, and arguably your third best, and we're counting on hopefully that there's some kids from the minors that are going to come in and do half, you know, anywhere near as good as that, and then a lot of kind of trash around that.
Well, I don't know what other defensemen are out there still, but I mean, Yzerman probably would not have problem making a trade if it means bolstering the team. If they're on the cusp of making the playoffs, say come around January, like February, long before the trade deadline, I could see him making a move.
I like to think that. I hope so. I truly do. It would be rather nice to see, admittedly.
But defense, that's going to be the big thing, because we scored a lot of goals last season. They really, truly did. They just weren't able to keep it out of their own net. Goaltending was sometimes hot fire, and then it was like cold through a lot of. I mean, Alex Lyon, he would play great for a string of games, and then he would get gassed. And then Husso would get injured, and you know, Reimer was just, you know, Reimer. So I mean,
yeah, we'll see if the addition of Cam Talbot actually.
I'm not holding my breath. I think my money is still on Ville Husso if he can stay healthy. But yeah, if they can just keep it to where they're not, and this was my original thought, if they can stop losing so many games in a row, I think they've got a legitimate shot, because there was quite a few times where they 6-game, 7-game losing streak. If they didn't have that, not only would they have made the playoffs, they wouldn't have had to wait for, you know, somebody else to lose. They would have been in there legitimately, maybe even in a regular spot and not having to rely on a wild card slot.
At this point, man, I'll settle for the wild card appearance. Like for me, I need to see positive momentum going forward. And we're now at the point where it's no longer, there's no longer a way where you can not miss out on the playoffs and still try and sell it as an improvement on last year.
Do you like what I just did here? My best John Madden. If they don't lose, they'll win.
I wasn't going to call you out on it. I was going to be nice for once.
But am I wrong?
I mean, you're not wrong. But
if they don't lose, they'll win. Back up.
The kind of dynamite, just in-depth analysis you've come to expect from Happy Hour.
I'm not wrong. I mean, losing so many games in a row, I mean, that's going to kill your momentum. It's going to kill kill the locker room. Keep the puck out of your own net. That's going to win you some games right there.
Well, it's, in theory, Cam Talbot can't do worse at that than the combination from last year.
Yeah, he did well for L.A., made L.A., because L.A. was starting to show signs of being a bust, and they made the playoffs last year. Cam Talbot was part of that.
It's a big part of that.
Yep.
Because he's the best goalie that team had on its roster for most of last year. Granted, apparently they didn't think highly enough of him, probably because he's 36 years old, so of course they felt like they were going to move on from him.
That's a big...
Rich was better, they had a better goals against and somewhat of a better save percentage, but also only played half the games that Talbot did.
Yep.
I think they've tapped out on this Phoenix Copley guy, who I thought at first maybe he'll be the answer they're looking for, and then it turns out, no, he very, very much was not. Nope. But, you know, I'm hopeful Talbot will solidify things. But again, defense. How much are we really expecting that Evanston and these other guys are going to come in and make an immediate impact? If you have one more solid, like, everyday caliber, like, good NHL defenseman, I could feel okay that, all right, so we're going to give, like, the second or third pairing over to mostly the young guys and let them get into it and kind of get their feet wet a bit more and, you know, show what they can do. But here, not to draw a parallel to the Tigers again, but it's like the same thing you did with, to a lesser extent, though, with guys like Green and Torkelson, where, like, here, you're the glue that's going to hold this whole thing together, and if it fails, it's all you guys' fault. Sider, at least, at this point, is experienced enough veteran where you can put that kind of pressure on him, and it's fine. But, so it's just Sider and these other two guys that are really going to be the core of your defense. I kind of worry, like, you do often risk sometimes when you put guys into that position without having more established veteran guys around them, like multiple of those, you tend to kill their confidence.
Yes.
And that's exactly what happened with Tork.
Yes.
Like, these are the kind of things you do have to somewhat worry about. Like, you want enough presence. Like, Sider's been here for a minute now, but even he's still relatively young.
This will be
young.
His third season.
Yeah, this will be season three. And you need, I would just like one more guy with real NHL experience who can, you know, kind of show them the right way. I'm not convinced Erik Gustafsson is that guy.
Well, I mean, he came from a winning pedigree with the New York Rangers. He's got this will be his ninth season. So, I mean, do I think he's going to be the end-all, beat-all?
He's also a career-minus player.
Yeah, well, I mean,
a career-minus player who really ain't much offensively. Like, is this really what I'm wanting? Like, be this dude, just follow what this guy does. Be that dude.
Well, I mean, we do
be a net negative.
I mean, we do have William Lagesson, for whatever it's worth. He's he was a +3 with 4 assists on the season. He looks like another stay-at-home defenseman, which is kind of what they needed. How many times do we see the odd man rush, or we would see a shorthanded goal going our way? I mean, it's a rough time. I mean, he spent some time in Toronto, Anaheim, Edmonton, so, I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing what he has going on. They only have him in the fourth as far as defense line, if that makes any sense, if I'm saying that correctly.
Right. But,
so, I mean, we'll see what happens. I mean, then you also got Albert Johansson. He just signed a new deal. We'll see what happens with him.
True, but again, we're putting a lot of faith in...
There's a lot of faith. There's a lot of
any guy who's never played at this level.
Yep. No, you're not wrong. You're definitely not wrong.
You like to be able to drop a guy like that in a team with good, experienced veteran mentors who can kind of show them the ropes. You don't really have that here at all.
Bring back Lidstrom. Did you see him at the draft table? He looked like he could still play.
He could probably still play now and be an upgrade over half your current defensive core, dude.
Come on, Nick.
Like, dude was like in his mid-40s and still running circles around guys. That dude was still a Norris Trophy contender at the end of his career. And he was already almost 50.
You're not wrong.
Well, I guess it's not to be. Now, I do also kind of want to apply this same, the logic, the argument such as it is, to your Detroit Tigers. And we go ahead and hit a break and we'll talk about it there too, because I feel like in that particular sphere, you're also getting an increasing amount of the Scott bots. We'll get into that coming up here on the other side of the break, because that's even more infuriating than the Steve bots, man. We'll do that next. It is Happy Hour at Solid State Radio. You know, Adam, I can at least understand on some level the position of the Steve bots
sure.
when it comes to the Red Wings, because we at least know we have actual evidence in front of us that suggests that at one point in his career, Steve Yzerman has been a good general manager.
Tampa Bay Lightning, yes.
And even the things here that he's done, like most of the trades and things, well, a lot of the trades and things he's done have worked out. Most of the drafting has been stellar. So I can at least, even if I don't necessarily agree with them that the all-knowing, all-seeing Steve Yzerman can do absolutely no wrong whatsoever, I can at least understand where these people are coming from.
Sure.
You know who I can't understand for the life of me?
Who?
The Scott bots. The people who are convinced that Scott Harris somehow has all the answers and we're all just idiots that can't see what his real plan truly is.
Well, they better.
These are the people that are infuriating me because he's done nothing to prove that he does, in fact, know what he's doing.
So what is their argument for Harris?
Just a lot of blind trust the process nonsense. Like, he's got a plan. You know, basically, they laugh at you if you have any, like, thought that, you don't think he knows what... Clearly, this is all part of his plan. And once, you know, Max Clark or Jace Young comes up here in 2027, y'all see how wrong you are. You'll see. You'll all see. Like, really? Like, we're now planning on guys who are still in single-A ball being the core of the team when the core of the team as assembled has basically been a dismal failure. And now we're Javi Baez is back up here, and no one can tell me why that's being allowed to happen. He's back up. He's expected to play tonight. Ryan Kreidler's locker has already been cleared out from reports down there. And not exactly that Ryan Kreidler was setting the world on fire by any means. Still had a better WAR than Baez did. And also didn't have a -8 defensive run saved. So yeah. At the very least, we had those things going for us. And also, the batting average wasn't any better, actually. But you know what? We also weren't paying him $90 million to be that terrible.
Yeah. How did Baez do in Toledo?
Like 3 hits and a home run or something of that sort. Like, it wasn't anything that was really knocking anybody's socks off. I mean, you go down there and you look at what Torkelson, say, for example, has done in Toledo this year. And it's at least been impressive. I can at least give props where props are due. He has gone down there and he has torn the cover off the ball. Or at least he was for a while. Now he's sunk down to .252 batting average, which is still better than what he was hitting up here, and has at least 4 home runs, 17 RBIs. So Baez, in his 4 games that he played for Toledo,
yeah,
he's 4 hits, one of those a home run, and 1 RBI. For whatever that's worth, he's now slugging .667. But again, we're talking 13 plate appearances here against Triple-A talent. What exactly am I supposed to take from that? At least Parker Meadows, you can argue he justified that call up. He was getting on base at like a .394 clip, had an OPS of .900 down there, and was actually getting some real power. He had 8 home runs and 24 RBI. You can completely understand why they felt that calling him up made sense, bringing him back up to the big club. Unfortunately, it didn't quite translate. He got hurt again, which didn't help. Or he got hurt this last time around, so now he's on the injured list. But the Baez thing seems like it was just kind of a formality. Like, yeah, we're going to call him back up no matter how bad he would have done. I'm not confident he can necessarily reenact that at the major league level, because literally everything from this season up to this point suggests that he won't.
Yeah. That's a bad one. I mean, for the bots to say that Harris is doing a good job, I mean, they kind of have to point at Baez. Was he the one that signed that contract? Was Harris right there, or was that a...
I believe that was an Al Avila deal.
Oh, boy.
Because we're not that far, ultimately, into Scott Harris's tenure as GM. But I'd like to say I can just be the, let-him-work guy. But I don't find myself being able to do that because I watched this offseason when, in fact, he went and did nothing to acquire bats for this team. Like, there are so many flyers you could have taken on free agency. Guys that honestly, there are league minimum guys you could have plugged into this lineup that would have been better than half your everyday roster. And even like a JD Martinez, like something like that wouldn't have like hurt your ability to compete down the line because, as you may remember, there is no salary cap in baseball at this point in time.
Right.
And that won't be changing anytime soon. It wouldn't have affected your ability to ultimately lock your guys up long term because these were only like 2-3 year deals that were signed with some of these guys. It at least would have helped the guys who were here gain some semblance of confidence because you know what? They wouldn't be the only guys who were actually good in the lineup that teams would be forced to pitch them. Like, you would be forced to pitch to a Spencer Torkelson if you know you got a JD Martinez waiting behind him. You have that combination of him and a Riley Green and, you know, some other free agent bat. All of a sudden, Tork doesn't have that complete loss of confidence that he's had. You know, Riley Green maybe hits even better than he currently is, and he's been hitting pretty good. Like, it's the idea that you give some protection in the lineup to your young guys that you want to be the core of your future, and they start to look like guys that you can build around in your future. Instead, we get Matt Vierling and Mark Canna. That's what we get instead.
Nice.
And to be fair, a few of these guys, the minor leaguers that have been thrust into starting roles here, guys like Andy Ibanez, obviously has done quite well. Kerry Carpenter has done what had been doing quite well before he hit the injury list. Wenciel Perez, who saw that one coming? I hadn't heard of him before this season when he got called up, and he has done literally everything you've asked him to. But you can't tell me one more bat in this division, one more bat on this team couldn't have made you at least a wild card contender. One more guy that can swing a bat competently at the major league level, and you would be talking about actually being in the wild card race. You're only 7.5 games back as it is right now, which is enough that we probably should just be selling whatever we can, but it could have been so much different. And it's why I can't find myself being fully on board the Scott Harris, you know, everything that man does is good and right train. Like, there's a lot of people who will just blindly defend, and it's the thing, honestly, in sports sometimes that annoys me the most is the people who, like, don't seem to, like, exhibit critical thinking. And it's like, whatever our team does is right. Whatever the decision they made obviously had to be the right one because it's the one they made.
Right.
And I'm just not that fan. I've never been that guy. I can't be that guy. I am just not predisposed to being that individual that has to, like, well, they must know what they're doing. But why do we think that? Why do we assume that? Why do we, and in some cases, despite overwhelming evidence that they don't, we can't believe it. Again, with Iserman, I can kind of get it. He has a track record of success. He steals guys in the draft that you never would have thought would be like cornerstones of your team for decades to come.
Yep. It's true.
I do get it. I'm not an unreasonable man here, I feel. But it just gets hard at some point to always have to take the side and get, you know, browbeaten by the social media fan base that does not. And trust me, the fire Steve Eisenman people are even worse. I'll be the first to admit, no, we're not talking about firing a guy. I just want, if this year you take a step back, I expect there to be a little bit of backlash, a little bit of heat, a little bit of heat on the seat, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's fair. I'm not asking for anything unreasonable here, I think. Maybe I am. I don't know. Feel free to tell me if I am. But
don't worry. In, was it 2025, 26, give or take, they're going to have to repave Woodward with all the victory parades they're going to have for the Tigers, the Pistons, the Wings, and the Lions. So it, they're going to have to repave the whole street.
You know how much I would love for that to be the case? It's
just one big parade.
Yeah.
Here come the Lions with their World Series. How you doing? Super Bowl win. Then you got the Pistons, then the Red Wings, and then the Tigers.
I would love it. I just, as a fan, I feel like the frustration is palpable here. And how long can you ask people to be patient for, ultimately? And Emil, I get that there are some people who are going to be, I don't care as long as it takes. I don't think most of us are wired that way, though. At least I know I'm not. I'll be the first person to tell you I'm not.
Well, you just want to be able to, if you don't get it, you want at least want to be still feel positive about it. You want to see improvement.
And at least I can feel like on the current level with the Red Wings, and hoping that Steve Yzerman's been lying to me this whole time about, oh, we might be prepared to take a step back next year. We might not contend for it. We might not be in this spot again where we're knocking on the door of the playoffs. Like, I'm hoping ultimately he's lying and that know that you are going to be there. I want to believe that immensely. But I can at least feel like there are signs that, yeah, okay, maybe we are there. With the Tigers, I don't feel that at all.
No.
I feel like you're further away than you've ever been. And that nothing that you've pulled up for the minors, by and large, with the exception of a few role players like Perez and Ibanez, and, you know, obviously Riley Green's done everything you've asked him. But I feel like so many of the things that we've hung our hat on, they're, all right, when these guys come up, it's going to be time to contend. We're going to have our core. To say nothing of the pitching, because you have found some nice things in the pitching. Keeter Montero, I think he could be a very solid everyday fifth starter. Tarek Skubal, we're going to go back and forth on the trading him thing forever. I don't know whether that's going to be a thing or not. Reese Olson, I think, is a nice piece for the long-term future. There's at least some pieces there, but it's not enough that you feel like it justifies the fact that you have been able to draft and develop a bat in this system,
yeah,
by and large. And when I keep getting pointed to, oh, well, when Torque comes up, you're gonna regret all the horrible things you said about where this team was. Before that, when Daz Cameron comes up here, you're gonna wish you hadn't said all those stupid things about how bad our hitting is. And every single time we just seem to be disappointed because you feel like you can't trust the people in charge to do the job that they set out to do. You don't feel like you've really. You don't feel like the people that you've entrusted this job with are necessarily the right people.
Right.
And that gets frustrating after a while. The Pistons I've completely written off because, I mean, at this point, I'm willing, in theory, to give Trajan Langdon his time to do what he's going to do. He just got here, and he's unfortunately found himself in a system where everything's going to be dictated by, is that Arne Tellem's kid's client, or was he an Arne Tellem client at one point? Because, you know, that's the sort of nepotism that's worked out really well for the Pistons. And people want to freak out because Bronny James got drafted. Like, you basically got your advisor's kid's clients all getting gigs here because of who they are and who he is. But, you know, these are the things we're worried about, apparently. So I've written them off. That's fine.
Yep.
I'm still holding on to some hope that sometime in my lifetime I'll get to see the Tigers be successful again and be at least moderately competent.
Okay, let's say the sports angels from on high come down and say, Sean, you've been a faithful subject. You've been a faithful Detroit sports fan. Got a deal for you. And you're going to say that the Wings are not going to make the playoffs in 5 years. The Tigers won't make the playoffs in 10, but the Lions will win the Super Bowl this year. Are you making that deal?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I can do another 5 years of that. A decade of Tiger futility. There'll be nothing left of this team. Like the park's getting burnt down, I swear, at that point. I don't know if I could do it.
All right, you heard it, folks. Sorry, Lions fans. Sean Cantwell, he resides at... This is his address. Right.
Can we make it 5 years of Tigers and Red Wings and the Pistons just never win anything again and move to Las Vegas? How about that? I'm willing to do that deal.
Wow. I'm just going a few years here. You want to relocate the team?
What have they done for me in the last two decades here, Hawk?
Right. Yeah. It's fair.
I would be more fine with that.
It has been two decades since they won, hasn't it?
It has. Well, yeah. This is where we're at, and people wonder why there's a group of us that are so just desperate to have something to cling on to here with one of these local teams. You wonder why it is that – you wonder why we are this way. I feel like it's fairly obvious, at least it is to me.
Yep.
Let's go ahead and hit a break. We'll close this thing out next. It is happy hour. Stick around.
Jack Daniels!
So enough mostly being depressed about Detroit sports and things. Let's get to something a little more lighthearted, shall we? Uplifting. Yeah. You have a good uplifting story over there?
Yeah, not really. we do spend a lot of time. I mean, Sean is recently married. I was recently married. So we both went through planning weddings and everything else, and we've been involved with weddings. So we spend some time, probably more time than two straight men would normally talk about weddings. But here we go again. This woman, she has decided that she is not going to attend her friend's wedding because they've decided to go with a man-free wedding. Does that mean men get in free? No, that means there are no men in this wedding at all.
So then is she marrying another woman then?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yep, these two women are part of the LGBTQ community.
I was going to say, how does this make literally any sense? But okay, there you go.
Yep, I mean, let me see. So the woman says, the article goes, when it comes to creating a guest list for your wedding, most people soon realize they have people in their lives that they first thought. But one couple has taken a unique approach to cut down their guest list, banning all males from attending their ceremony, including their dads and brothers.
Wow.
Confused by this, a woman has taken to social media to share how her friend Lisa and her fiancé Sophie have decided to have a man-free wedding. She said, I've known both of them for several years, and I am quite close with Lisa, so I'm not surprised. I was not surprised that they invited me to the wedding. But she was surprised by the fact that no guys were allowed in there. However, on the invitation, it was noted that it was a man-free wedding event, meaning that no men are allowed to be there. Despite not being a man myself, I felt it was a weird decision on their part. And that would be. That'd be just like, you know, that's basically saying, like, we always say, are you going to invite somebody? Jesus Christ.
People really are big fans of just hanging out outside the windows. Like, don't scare the DJ. Like, don't tap on the glass. It frightens the DJ.
Can we help you with something?
I'm sorry, no, I'm just listening, watching you guys work, not trying to give anyone a heart attack.
Well, you're doing it. I say you're doing a mighty fine job of it.
I would have given you CPR, though, so everything would have been okay. But you came to and regained consciousness.
Yeah.
Sweating on top of you, like, it's all good.
Oh, good Lord.
All right.
The fun of being in a public building where people just occasionally wander into your live show and whatnot.
Yeah.
Good times. So
on-air sign and everything. And oh, hey, how you guys doing?
What you guys doing in there? Radio things?
Yeah.
Radio stuff? So
yeah, two women are getting married together. They decided to go ahead and just eliminate all the men and just have just all women. Rumor has it they couldn't have a relish tray because nobody could open the pilkin jar. But
you know. Oh my God. That's our Adam. So do we at least have like a situation where the families are just very like anti like LGBTQ, and that's why we have the no men edict here? Like,
that's the only thing I can think of. They contacted her. They said they wanted to know why she wasn't coming, and she just tried to make up a good excuse. But I'm a bad liar, so after she pressed me for reason, I told her the truth, and I think the no men rule is weird, and I don't want to be involved in that. I did not tell her that I contacted her brother, just that I'm not a fan of events segregated by gender. And
What did the brother say about that? Did he know? Like, that's what I'm kind of curious about. Like, so she did go and ask the sibling about it, and no one was able to give them a particularly satisfactory answer. So I found it over here. Apparently, the brother, this person messaged the bride's, one of the bride's brother. She had apparently both him and this other girl's father are not invited. He doesn't know about the other bride's family, but assumes it's the same with them, and he has no idea what prompted the rule. He says at present it is understandably turned into a whole family dispute.
I mean, there are. I could imagine if it was the other way. Homosexual men get married, and there's like no women at all. I mean, a lot of people would freak out. First of all, the mother of the grooms would not stand for that. They'd crash that wedding like Phantom of the Opera.
Absolutely. So apparently there was a confrontation of sorts. Apparently Lisa branded this woman a bad friend for refusing to support her and Sophie for wanting their wedding to be women-centered, wanting to know whether she's in the wrong. She said, I told her it would be centered on women anyway, considering that, well, both the people getting married are women. She hung up, and I haven't heard from her since, but Sophie's been sending messages saying, I have internalized misogyny.
No, I'm just a member of society, and I know that, you know, at least 49% of that society is men.
Yeah, like that's excluding a good chunk of people out of your life for reasons that they're apparently just not willing to share to anybody here.
I mean, and I'm going to tiptoe on this landmine as much as I can.
Yeah, please do.
I know that they're, and I'm being 100% serious. I'm not making light of anything, but I know there's a lot of women who have chosen the same sex because they've had to deal with abuse from the men in their life. That they feel threatened by men in their lives. Where like a lot of women, lesbians who their doctor's a woman. They hang around all women. It's all they. If they could exclude guys out of their life completely, they would. Where it's so this is not surprising. It's just really kind of if you'll excuse the irony, really ballsy of them to say, okay, no men whatsoever at our wedding. I mean, it just seems. I mean, it's their wedding. We've always said it. We can't backtrack it now. It's their wedding, so they should be able to make the decisions that they make. But
now I guess you're going to have to own ultimately the consequences of basically telling your own brother and father, and you know other members of your, and I guess basically any man you might happen to associate with, that you're not welcome in our lives. That's basically what you're saying.
Yeah. Are they also going to make that stipulation with caterers?
They might honestly, if they're willing to, if this woman's willing to not invite her own father and brother to the wedding, and it's not a, you know, a situation where like awful nasty things were said in this regard, I think they absolutely would probably insist on that.
Wow, I would love to see. Yeah, hi, catering company. Yeah, I'm looking to about three, maybe about 100 people. Well, actually about 50 now, but I mean there's gonna be a lot of people. We have a no dudes policy. Can you make sure that there's no dudes working
for your
company?
Hello? Yeah, like, what, they hung up on me.
Excuse me? I mean, that. What's the difference between that and saying no race? There's not certain races available
or allowed welcome at the wedding. Like, yeah, wow. How is that? It's not really any better, certainly. I mean,
wow. And internal
misogyny, she says. Because you want to include people. How dare you want to do that?
Yeah,
you terrible human being, you.
Yeah. That's, it's just a, I'd kind of like to be a fly on the wall, a female fly on the wall.
Right, because otherwise you wouldn't be allowed in. Granted, I don't exactly want to know how they're going to go about determining that, but you know, it is what it is. Either way, I don't think they should be surprised in any way, shape, or form that this has gotten them quite a bit of backlash for it. And
yeah.
No, you're not a bad friend for not going and supporting this. Like, I have said on this show that I wouldn't show up to a wedding that my wife wasn't invited to.
Yes.
Much less, or that I wasn't allowed to bring her with me. Much less, oh, well, if there's any men that you're not invited to this wedding because you're a man and no man in your life is invited to the wedding, I feel like I've got to stand pretty firm on this, that no, that's not cool. You're more than well within your rights to not go. You're not a terrible person. And certainly it's not an internal misogyny or whatever they're trying to say it is. Anyway, we got to go. Stick around a full hour of local original
dance tips.
Is that we're taking dance tips from you?
That's right. Last week we talked about the cha-cha. Now we're talking about the foxtrot.
Let me see you attempt to do either one of those.
I don't have, just know the names.
That's honestly better than I expected. So good for you. Sessions, full hour of local original music coming up next. Be a fun week this week on that. We'll be sitting down later this week with Caleb Malooly from the Gasoline Gypsies.
Yeah, you got him.
I had to literally stalk this man out to multiple gigs of his to get him into this studio.
Yeah.
I'm still not entirely sure I'm not going to have to bust out the rope and the duct tape and the whole bit to actually physically secure him here.
Yeah, hopefully.
And then
makes
Friday.
Makes for a better story.
Make for a hell of an interview for sure.
Yeah.
Make it hard to, you know, to get out answers to your questions through the duct tape, but yep. You know. And then Friday you've got
Idle Kings coming in. And then on Saturday, old Captain Hollywood from Slumlord Radio is gonna be calling in to the show.
Oh, that should be
new,
fun.
Slumlord Radio single.
Ooh.
Out. Yeah.
Are you getting a world premiere?
Absolutely.
Ooh.
Another world premiere. That's another thing. That's one thing I should get Mitch Gill to give me a soundbite for. That'd be cool.
Right.
World premiere.
Well,
you heard it here first.
Next time we're able to, you know, kidnap him and get him in studio, we'll make that happen.
There you go.
But yeah, Sessions is next. See you tomorrow at 3:00.